Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about why you're so tired.
Why are you so tired?
About to find out.
Hey, who shared this with us? A listener? Chris Hemmelman? Who was it?
I don't remember.
I think Mike did.
Mike, who's not on the podcast today. An article from Kurt Thompson, who's a doctor, Christian counselor, specialist in the field of interpersonal neurobiology, in case you needed some big words. Put out an article a few weeks ago called A Body of Work. And it was really helpful to us in... It was helpful to me, I'll just say that.
Yeah,
and figuring out why I feel fatigued. Here's the basic point. It's written on April 15th, so right in the middle of the month of April when we were in coronavirus lockdown. He was like, hey, why do we all feel so much more exhausted now that we're doing Zoom meetings and Skype meetings and blah, blah, online stuff? And let me just read you a couple quotes. He basically is just answering that question, and here's what he says. Human beings use our bodies to communicate upwards of 85 to 90% of everything we say. Say is in quotes there. These nonverbal cues, eye contact, tone of voice, facial expression, body language, gestures, timing, and intensity of responses are the body's portion of what it means to be with others and with ourselves. To communicate what we are experiencing. We send and we receive vital life-giving exchanges to each other, and this does not require conscious intention to do so. Our bodies are working independently of our conscious thinking brain, enabling us to love and be loved, to be known and to know, even without the use of words. And this is why we are so much more tired at the end of the day. His point is, when you're trying to... When you're in a room bodily with someone, 85 to 90% of what you communicate is received through gestures, tone of voice, facial expressions, all these nonverbal things. When you're watching someone on a screen, what happens is the cognitive part of your brain has to process all of that and pick up all those cues two-dimensionally rather than three-dimensionally without the body being present in the room. And basically, it just means your brain is working a whole lot harder to have a conversation. Now, what was fascinating to me about this was two things. One, it helps me understand. But two, because, man, it's amazing the work that your autonomous nervous system can do in the background without you even being conscious of it. You know, you guys are like both nodding right now. And I'm like, oh, I'm picking up your nonverbal cues of like you're nodding with what I'm saying. That's, you know, it's one of those things that when you're in a room with someone, you can intuit all of these cues that are a part of communication. And I just have this tendency to think communication is really just about words. Just we're talking to each other. But no, our bodies are involved and invested in the work of communication.
What he says really rings true in light of, so I'm going to share a little bit about Mindy's experience with Zoom. I'm sure she won't mind. Hey, babe, thanks, if you're listening. But anyway, she has actually found that she's enjoyed Zoom quite a bit. And one of the reasons why is because she is so hyper aware of her surroundings. Like one of the things that it's almost like her brain is on overdrive or kind of being in tune with all of those nonverbals and what's going on in the room. And sort of all those social cues can sometimes feel a little overwhelming at times because she's so aware that when that stuff is kind of stripped away and it's just content, she sometimes feels a little more freedom because it's like, man, my brain doesn't feel like it's on overdrive right now. So she's actually been finding Zoom a little bit more refreshing than the rest of us. And she sort of figured that out before we read this article. Then reading this article was like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. That if, depending on kind of how you're wired or in tune with all those nonverbals, that if that can sometimes feel very overwhelming, then maybe Zoom has been an incredible experience for you. I can't say that it's been for me. I'm ready to just throw my computer through a window. Well, I'm tired of
that's because we know that you're really on Marco Polo most.
Yeah, exactly. but anyway, I mean, so I think if you sort of look at this from different experiences, I think a lot of what he says just rings true.
That The fatigue is definitely there. I remember in the early weeks of the coronavirus stuff, I felt a tiredness, but then I also felt like I wasn't doing anything.
Yeah. Why am I tired?
I have no reason to be tired. Then there was one day where I had 4 Zoom meetings, which if you had 3 or 4 kind of pastoral counseling scenarios going on in one day, you'd kind of be like, oh, it was kind
you'd
of a lot.
A tired, yeah.
But at least it would feel like you had met with the people and engaged and exerted some energy and thought about it. That day where I had 3 or 4 in a row, I kind of went home just numbed out. Like I had just been, you don't know. And my point is, to his point, when you're not actually with the people or with the person, you're actually not quite sure how that meeting actually went. You're not sure how that Zoom conversation went. You were dialoguing, there was interaction, but the nonverbals are essential. Mm. The other thing I was thinking about while reading this article was technology's been a huge benefit. We would all have to agree with some of the ways that we've been able to stay connected. What's interesting to me though is like Facebook weddings and how people have gone towards that approach. And I think
Travis, people are actually doing this?
Yeah, this is a thing.
I literally have not heard of this.
This is a thing.
Right
and
now.
I remember being in a conversation a couple weeks ago with somebody who we were talking about, our Facebook wedding is going to be the way to go because more people can actually show up. I totally disagree with that because there is same as the church. We're to get together, right? These bodies have to come together. These people have to come together. That's what communication is going to look like. Big events like weddings, we got to figure out how to pull those off again outside of technology.
Facebook weddings, man. I've been out of the loop. Apparently,
yeah.
I've been reading too.
You
many
didn't get invited to any Facebook weddings. Me neither.
I've been invited to a Facebook wedding. Bethany, you love the Zoom. You hate the Zoom. What's been your experience?
I have mixed feelings, I think, because I think if Zoom is done well, then it can be like it was a good way for like our gospel community to stay just in contact and check in like once a week. But in order for Zoom to go well, I think it has to be like a short meeting. Like you can't have it last more than an hour. And then you have to have somebody who's like clearly setting like this is how like we're going to each of us are going to answer this question and you're going to get 2 or 3 minutes to talk and then we're going to move to the next person so everybody can talk. Like it has to be organized, I think, in order for it to be beneficial. But I also just think it's such a weird, early on somebody mentioned like the weird thing about Zoom is that you see yourself on a screen, and when you're talking to somebody face to face, you never see your facial expressions. Mm. So when I'm on Zoom meetings, I mean, this is gonna make me sound really vain.
You're looking at how
but
you're...
I'm just looking at myself. I'm just like, oh my gosh, my hair looks terrible today. Oh, I look like a garbage truck, or just, you know, I'm thinking of myself and I'm not really paying attention to anybody else or what else is being said until I have to. And then it's also just interesting to read this article and then think about the amount of Zoom calls kids have been on.
Oh,
like
man.
these last couple of weeks. And so like, just like parents, if your kids have been nightmares, this is probably why. They're tired.
Yeah. They're tired. Yeah. I wonder if one of the things the Lord is doing, or one of the sort of common graces in this moment, is that actually it shows us the limitations of technology. Since technology is one of our idols and everybody always wants to believe that just with more technological innovation, things will get better and better. If there's this almost reaction of like, actually embodiedness really matters, actually presence really matters. And I think, you know, intuitively that's always made sense, but I wonder if now having experienced sort of the flatness of two-dimensional communication or mediated communication, there's just a deeper hunger of like, man, actually being in a room together is fun. You know, seeing people face to face, there's something powerful about that. And without even being able to narrate and describe everything that goes into that, like Kurt Thompson can, there's something in us that says, oh, we benefit from being with each other.
Yeah. I like the analogy he uses of our bodies actually look for the presence of other bodies. And that if we don't find them, it's a bit like a cell phone that keeps looking for service, and if it's not there, it actually drains the battery much quicker. So I think again, it's we're wired for that, and we feel that, and when it's not there, boom, there's this tiredness, there's this emotional drain, and it really is heightening the sense of just the social wiring we have and we can't escape.
One of the things more philosophically that Kurt Thompson is trying to do in this article is to give us a certain anthropology or to argue for a certain anthropology because he is sort of focused on the field of interpersonal neurobiology. He wants to emphasize embodiedness as a core component of what it means to be human. And one of the mistakes that Christians have made for a long time is sort of a weird dualism where we really believe that what we really are is a disembodied spirit and the body is sort of just like a thing we have to carry around with us, or a, you know, the container in which our soul moves around. He has this interesting point in this article. He says the mind is an embodied and relational process. So think about the difference between mind and brain, right? Brain is the actual organ inside your skull. Mind is that invisible part of your being. And he says mind is embodied. Like the nature of who you are at the core of your being is embodied and relational. This is similar to what Plass and Cofield have said in their book, The Relational Soul. The whole point is you as a being are an embodied and relational being. So the body is not secondary or sort of peripheral to who you are. It's an essential part of who you are. He says, we are embodied and we are spirited. Take either one away and we stop being fully human. And what we are experiencing right now is the act of living disembodied lives, right? We're trying to interact with each other in a disembodied way over a screen. And that just is less than fully human. It takes away an integral part of what it means for us to be human beings and to be made in the image of God. And so I'm hopeful that for the church, this whole experience will help us recover maybe just a healthier anthropology, a healthier sense of what it means to be an embodied being. In the second half of the article, he mentions that our bodies are not only made to communicate with others, but they are made for movement. And so one of the things this is created for is just less movement, which creates anger and irritability because our bodies feel that lack of movement as a lack of agency. Part of what we do in our bodies to demonstrate capacity and agency is we move. Think about a baby kicking its legs or a toddler running around the room. This is one of the earliest ways we express our personhood is by moving around, by expressing our agency physically. And he says, when the government tells you don't leave your house, you know, or whatever, the reduction of bodily movement actually is a constraint on your personhood. And we feel that psychologically as a kind of powerlessness. And that's powerful to us. It's a unique way of being constrained. And what he's doing here is sort of putting language to some things I think we're intuitively feeling. It's like, why do I feel angry, irritable, you know, kind of like I'm not able to do, I'm powerless in a certain kind of way. Well, because your movement is constrained and that really is a kind of powerlessness.
A couple of weeks ago, I sent out a video to First City just talking about how do we really build for endurance, that this could be an extended period of trial, and how do we think about the long haul? And one of I cited this article and emphasized like, hey, if you're feeling that sense of anger and maybe irritability and anger is something that seems to be sprouting up more, that yeah, there's probably some things going on in your heart that are being exposed. But in addition to that, this lack of movement is a significant cause of that. And so one of the ways that if you're feeling that anger, hey, just get out and take a walk, go do some exercise. Doesn't have to be, you know, a ginormous fitness routine, but just the importance of bodily movement, physical exercise, taking a walk, getting some fresh air, really is, it may seem like a very simple thing, but I think is a super, super important part of what it looks like to endure this season. Cause again, who knows how long we're going to be in this situation. And so if we're thinking about ways to really thrive over the long haul, being attuned to your body and giving your body the proper care and the proper movement that it needs is going to be vital.
I've taken my dog on so many more walks in the last month.
My dog's loving
it. My dog is well exercised.
Dogs are the ones that are really winning with this whole quarantine thing. Their people are home and so many walks.
It's interesting to think about embodied worship, not just with other people, but the stuff that we do with our bodies, as like being in quarantine, kind of heightened our awareness to all of that, not just the fatigue that comes through the Zoom stuff, but also just, man, I'm like meant for so much more, which makes us have to appreciate the Catholic Church and just some of the other, like, that's where my mind went, you know, like I even, you know, we've done parking lot church for the last handful of weeks, but I really miss communion. And one of the reasons I miss communion is because it's a worshipful remembrance, but it's something I'm doing with my body, and obviously in our stream and in our tribe, and we just don't have very many things we're doing with our body. Is my point.
One of Kurt Thompson's recommendations at the end of this article is, "Hey, sing, like even when you're in quarantine, because it's this bodily response of worship that, as you're saying, Dusty, connects my body to an expression of worship before the Lord, which is, you know, there's something deeper about that than just thinking thoughts about God."
So one of the reasons I'm tired, you're telling me, is because life isn't cognitive.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been doing some writing lately. And one of the things I'm doing is a lot of work around brain, around just like how the brain functions and how that maps onto our struggles with sin and sanctification. Mm. One of the fascinating things is when you study the brain, you know, there's three parts of the brain. There's like the part that basically just regulates your basic animal functions, eating, breathing, you know, going to the bathroom, things like that. There's the limbic system, which is sort of regulates your social function, you know, how we pick up cues from one another and process fear or anxiety and those kinds of things. And then there's the sort of rational part of your brain that does, you know, calculation and language and all of that stuff. And really what Kurt Thompson's pointing out is that so much of our communication happens in that second category of the brain, where it's precognitive, it's subconscious, it's the limbic, it's just sort of how we've become attuned to the world. It's all the stuff that Plass and Cofield say about attachment and how it just sort of like conditions us to just respond to the world in certain ways. And part of how human interaction works is when we think of communication, or we tend to think in terms of language, right? I have to, even on a Zoom call, I have to use words to express what I'm saying, and I have to be able to speak the same language as the people I'm interacting with. And if I can't communicate with them. And that is all true. But so much of communication is precognitive and preverbal, and it's embodied in the sort of this automated part of my brain that I don't even think about using when I'm using it. I told my kids are fascinated by this story. I don't know why, but I did my undergraduate degree in communication. And for one of my capstone projects, I had to do a whole research project on nonverbal communication that was like, they made us set it up like it was a peer-reviewed, like research kind of deal. So I was in this group of people from school, and we were trying to basically set up this research study. So what we decided to study was nonverbal communication in dating relationships. And so one of the things we did is I just went to a restaurant and just sat there with a notebook and just tried to pay attention to every couple that was in the restaurant and just track all their nonverbal communication.
That's creepy sounding.
Yeah.
It was kind of it was a little creepy.
Not creepy at all.
But it was also amazing, because basically what you realize is, hey, I have no idea what these people are actually saying. All I'm able to pick up on is their nonverbals. And you could tell which couples are in a fight, which couples are on a first date, which couples have been married for 30 years. Like, you can just, there is so much you can tell strictly from the nonverbals. And my kids are freaked out, because they're like, you just went to a restaurant and watched people? That's weird. But the point is that research project was sort of working in this same category of how much of our communication we're not aware of, but our bodies are saying things all the time. Mm-hmm. And if anyone is just like watching, you know, they can pick up a lot of the things we're saying, not without hearing anything, just by the ways our bodies are interacting in space with each other.
So we've recommended, hey, get some exercise. What other things do you guys think would be helpful based on kind of what Kurt Thompson is saying and other things we've read and we understand about sort of embodied existence to kind of help people compensate? I don't know. I mean, maybe there's just an expectation that this is how it's going to be, but there are some gaps here that life right now is leaving. Are there ways to do the best to fill that, or do we sort of have to just grieve and mourn in this time and hope that this period ends soon?
I don't know, maybe a little bit of both. You know, one thing I've been attuned to the fact of, like, how awkward is it? Like, I had a meeting with a guy yesterday that I had never met before. And I walk into the room and he's standing there. And obviously the first thing we do is shake hands because it's just like, it's what you do. And I just felt in that, I looked at him and I was like, hey, can we do that? Like, can we actually do this? He's like, yeah, why not? You know, it just felt like, it's so weird to walk in a room and have that awkward moment of like, what am I supposed to do? If we don't shake hands, how do we like acknowledge each other's presence? Because mm-hmm. that's very embodied. And when you don't have a embodied way of doing that, it just sort of like, I can do a head nod, but it just feels weird and kind of jerky, you know?
What's up, bro?
I guess I'm saying that to say I've been noticing, Chris, the importance of like basic human touch and trying to figure out, hey, at least in our family, how can we just like put our arm around each other a little more, like, you know, mm-hmm. connect with each other physically in ways that are appropriate, but in ways that just say like, hey, you know what? Like, we're human beings, and like actually even like wrestling with my son a little bit more, like punching him in the leg, you know, just stuff that's like, it's like that embodied way of saying like, hey, you matter to me. And like, this relationship is important. And I think I feel the fact that like, can't hug anyone, can't shake hands with anyone, can't put a hand on the shoulder, like technically not supposed to have any kind of physical contact with people. And that just feels really weird. And so there's a piece of that that I think has to be just grieved and left. But there's also a piece in which, at least in our family, we're just trying to like say, hey, let's just try to like hug each other a little more, you know, and just try to capture the fact that that gap exists.
I don't really have a thought, Chris, to your, or I don't have an answer to your question in the immediate, but what I see pastorally kind of, and kind of what I'm concerned about going into the future is, as we come out of hiding, so to speak, I think it's going to be really important for Christians to not be afraid of other people. And we probably, we need to lead that charge. I think we have, in other words, it might be a missional thing to not be afraid of somebody else.
Yeah. It's good.
I've seen that in some of my neighbors actually. So I guess what I'm saying is, because of the sovereignty of God and because of being an embodied person, I think it's going to be important for Christians to engage other Christians and just everybody else and kind of lead the charge on, hey, I'm actually not afraid of things. I'm not afraid of other people. I think if Satan can make us afraid of other people amidst of coronavirus or on the heels of coronavirus, which we already have, I think, in our culture, too much stiff arming going on. And there's a variety of reasons for that, probably. I just think the enemy could really get a foothold on that and capitalize, and I just kind of refuse to let him do so.
Yeah, this is where I kind of feel the tension in the, I don't want to deny that, hey, yeah, it's the social distancing is good and necessary in some ways, and I don't want to minimize that we have to, you know, kind of keep our distance right now in some of these practices. But there's also this sense of, hey, that desire to connect with people and that desire to sort of reopen the country is not just driven by money. Like, I think some people kind of reduce it, and it's not just people that are conspiracy theorists or just reckless and flippant and, you know, my rights, you can't tell me to wear a mask. You know, like some of the more caricatures, and I know there are people that probably validate that caricature, but this is actually more deeply embedded. And just as humans, we need this. We're wired for this. And to deny it, you can't just assume that there aren't long-term consequences and damaging effects to our mental and emotional and relational health. So those impulses that we have should be validated and should be listened to. And yeah, we want to be wise and smart and sober-minded about it. But let's not just assume that my desire to be near and my desire to be out and connect with people is just recklessness and me trying to push back and to disregard what's going on. And I think your point's spot on, Dusty. Like, Christians should be leading the charge. Like, we should say, hey, embodied existence matters, connection matters, and we're not going to be stupid and reckless, but nor are we going to be hemmed in by fear.
Mm-hmm. So why are you so tired? Because you're an embodied being. And your body is really key to how you communicate. And you are more tired when your brain has to do more work to pick up cues in communication because you're not in the same space as another person. We'll post this article in the notes if you want to go read it yourself. It's not very long. And we've summarized some of the more helpful insights. But it was helpful to experience this and have someone put some language on it in ways that helped us understand why we particularly were feeling tired, and perhaps why you are too. So thanks for listening and engaging this with us.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.